Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we'll speak with House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson about the future of the Farm Bill in the full House. But first, here are this week's headlines. As concerns about supply chain disruptions from the Iran war continue, the White House is waiving domestic shipping requirements. The White House said Wednesday it is temporarily suspending a requirement that goods moved between U.S. ports have to be transported on U.S. vessels as part of an effort to ease high oil and fertilizer prices. The Merchant Marine Act, better known as the Jones Act, is a century-old law that requires goods shipped between U.S. ports to move on U.S.-built, flagged, owned, and staffed vessels. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said the administration is waiving the requirement for 60 days in an attempt to lower oil and fertilizer prices caused by trade disruptions from the war. Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Vaden says demand for sustainable aviation fuel in Japan and higher ethanol blends in the U.S. brighten the outlook for U.S. biofuels. When speaking at an event hosted by the University of Arkansas, Vaden said the Trump administration has received at least one proposal with two serious private sector backers that could lead to the building of a U.S. SAF plant with Japan as a main customer as a result of Japan's recent agreement to buy sustainable aviation fuel from the U.S. The U.S. currently doesn't have a facility that produces enough SAF to sell to Japan. Ag shippers are facing rising diesel costs, and farmers could share the bill. Fuel prices are rising as the war with Iran has nearly halted vessel traffic through the Strait of Hormuz, and the added costs are expected to be felt across the ag transportation chain. According to data from the Hormuz Strait Tracker, which tracks the strait, only 9 ships transited it on Tuesday. Ag leaders and experts agree the pause has largely affected fuel and fertilizer prices. After an over 20-hour-long markup, the Farm Bill recently passed out of the House Agriculture Committee. We asked Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson about his initial reaction to getting 7 Democratic votes on the bill.
Well, I was really pleased, Lydia. The bill passed 34 to 17. We had a couple members that were home. Doug Lamalford passed away, so we had a vacancy. And then Dr. Baird and Mr. Jackson were home really burying their family members. And so I thought it was a really 2-1 solid vote. I really appreciate the 7 Democrats that came along. You know, I work really hard and I do that every day, but in the final weeks, it seemed apparent that the Democratic members in particular their ideas weren't being communicated along to me and my team, and they just felt like they didn't have all the information they needed. So I upped my game. I did a lot of individual outreach, worked with not just those 7 members, but a few more that I think that we were able to include. I think we had 109 amendments that were offered, and 40 some, I believe, were incorporated, which on top of the 180 original in the base language, 180 bills that were included, like 131 of those were bipartisan, really, really solid bipartisan bill. But as I like to say, you can't over communicate. And I think it's the communication is what I give credit, for the ultimate success and the bipartisan support.
Yeah. And so the next step for this farm bill is it moving to a vote on the full House floor. So I'm curious, how many Democrats have committed to you that they will vote for it when it reaches that vote on the House floor?
I have started and will continue to sit down and talk with not just my Democratic friends that supported the bill, but I want to talk with those who did not vote for the bill and see what we can do to moving forward to be able to earn their support, and we'll be working also with folks off the committee to do that as well. I'm pretty confident the bill will pass on the floor, but I want it to pass with as much support as possible. I think that's important as we send our House product over to the Senate.
There's been a few so-called poison pills as part of the Farm Bill, specifically that pesticide preemption, which has drawn opposition from some Democrats as well as some MAHA-aligned Republicans. I mean, does that provision alone, are you confident that the Farm Bill can pass with that still in there, or could that be one thing that maybe gets stripped in negotiations?
With good communications based on real facts, I think we'll be fine with that provision. There's a lot of false information on what we're doing in terms of pesticide labeling. 40% of the agriculture chemicals are manufactured by China. They're not going to go through 50 different states, let alone the issue with your unaffordability of trying to get something through 50 different states. It creates food affordability issues. There's absolute lies being said about how this is a liability shield. It is not. I publicly stated, and I said during the markup, that if you have a bad actor that put forth a product that hurts people, then they need to be able to be sued, and I fully support that. We do not provide any type of liability shield. I do think when if people really understand that this is about providing using the best group of scientists in order to define, to review, approve, and define the storage, application, and cleanup of these agriculture chemicals. I think if people have the facts that, we can address that. And I know I need to lean into that. That is something that we are, that we're actively working on, pushing back on the misinformation.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
Yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. Senate Ag Committee Chair John Bozeman said the preemption for pesticide rules and a fix for California's Proposition 12 could be dropped from the Farm Bill in the Senate because of Democratic opposition. We asked House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson if he'd be supportive of removing those provisions.
Well, Senator Bozeman, who's a dear friend of mine, right, a brother in the Lord, he was a mentor when I first came to the House. He's going to do what he needs to do to get 60 votes out of the Senate, and I understand that. But you know what? I believe in regular order, so we will ultimately deal with those issues going to a conference committee, and that's why it's so important that we have those couple issues that we address those, including. Safe pesticide labeling in the house product.
Yeah, I also want to get your thoughts. The war in Iran has really sent fertilizer and fuel prices through the roof as we look ahead to spring planting. You know, what concerns you most about this conflict as you look at the broader farm economy, which is already struggling right now?
Well, a lot of it boils down to that Straits of Hormuz. The amount of fertilizer, the amount of inputs that have moved through that very tight waterway that borders Iran, and the issues there. I did take to heart something I heard yesterday. I don't know how it's going to work out, but Iran, I think, is proposing if we can get to the end of this war and peace, that they're calling on multi-nations to work together to maintain safety in the Straits of Hormuz. I took it as a positive sign when I heard, whether it was the foreign ministry of Iran or who it was, whatever government leader yesterday that made remarks about, as peace is achieved, this waterway is so important to commerce. It's important to Iran, but it's important to the rest of the world that different countries work together to make sure that we're able to have a future flow of commerce through those narrow straits.
Yeah, and one maybe opportunity in some way with the war would be if there's a spending bill, there's a potential to move additional farm aid through that. So, I'm curious what those discussions have been like so far and if that's still something that you're pushing for.
There is a need for additional bridge payment, and it is just a bridge payment. Farmers, I've never met a farmer who was really crazy about taking a check from the government in order to stay in farming when they want market solutions. And that's what our farm bill, the Farm Food and National Security Act that we passed with bipartisan votes out of the committee, that's what it provided, with the doubling of MAP and FMD, the lowering of operational costs in terms of bringing down the cost of crop insurance, expanding crop insurance to specialty crops, probably for the first time ever, improving the credit title to be able to have the credit resources to be able to purchase your farm or ranch or to operate it in a given year. And so there's, we're working really hard to address that, but bridge payments are needed. I will say I've worked with Senator Hoeven with both Senate appropriations and Senate authorization, right? Senator Bozeman, Senator Hoeven, who really have taken the lead on this issue in the Senate, working with Leader Thune. And I know they're committed to looking at additional resources. I've worked with them. I'm very supportive of what they're doing, but I also want to represent the specialty crop industry. We have probably over 1,000 specialty crops in this country of varying sizes, and they're very important and they're challenged. And so I'm working on proposals dealing with specialty crop farmers certainly more than that $1 billion, which USDA had came up with. And I'm looking at ways to be able to pay for that side of it as well. And I got to throw in there, being from Penns Woods, Pennsylvania, but this is an issue all across the country. Our sawmills are really struggling right now with the disruption of timber markets. We're losing sawmills. And when you lose a sawmill, you lose the forest industry. And so I'm going to try to do my best to do a bridge payment it'll be enough actually for our sawmills. Keep them in business.
Yeah, Chairman, we've talked extensively about this so far in the few months this year, but what do you see as a dollar figure for that? Ag groups are pushing for $15 billion and $5 billion for specialty crops. Is that still kind of what you're eyeing? You mentioned.
Well, I think the 15 is probably right. The five billion is too low, in my opinion, for specialty crops. So, and I, like I said, I'm taking the lead on that. And I think I have some ideas on how we can do that, pay for it, so it won't be just on the specialty crop side. We're just increasing spending. I think there's a way to do it in an accountable way. So we'll see going forward. I'm going to continue to do my best on that issue.
How much more than five? Would that maybe be seven or seven and a half?
No, I think 10. That's the number I've talked about, and $200 million for sawmills. To be completely candid and transparent, that is... that's my starting point that I'm trying for anyways.
Awesome. And what was the discussion been on what the funding mechanism could be for that so far?
Normally these supplemental bills are not paid for. I think we need to be accountable in terms of finding pay-fors. I'm looking around within, the jurisdiction of the Agriculture Committee to see where we might be able to find some additional pay-fors. Right now I'm getting all my exercise turning over rocks in agriculture, looking for money.
We'll be back with more Newsmakers, but first, Andrew Honecke has more on American fertilizer imports, and this week's Map It Out.
The lack of ships passing through the Strait of Hormuz is causing a lot of uncertainty for the fertilizer markets as planting season is about to begin. Supply disruptions can influence prices and availability anywhere. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, roughly 97% of potassium is imported, as well as 18% of nitrogen and 13% of phosphate. This map shows the countries that the U.S. imported the most fertilizer from last year. According to USDA, Canada was first with more than 13 million metric tons, then Russia with nearly 5 million, followed by Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and Trinidad and Tobago. Other countries that rely on fertilizer from specific areas could be forced to look for other options, which would both create more competition and increase costs for American farmers. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Honecke.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper for my brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world.
Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. The war in Iran and closure of the Strait of Hormuz has sent fertilizer and fuel prices skyrocketing. We're joined by Josh Linville with StoneX and Darren Kopic with the Ag Retailers Association on our panel this week. To begin, Josh, can you provide an update on the conflict and how fertilizer is being impacted?
Yeah, so this is a tough one. You got to figure out where you want to start from, right? I mean, obviously, the talk has been surrounding the attacks on Iran and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. And that's really what our focus has been the first 2 weeks of this entire conflict, is that strait and its closure. Because when you sit down and think about it from a very fertilizer-specific point of view, three of your top 10 global urea exporters sit behind the strait. Three of your top 10 anhydrous exporters sit behind the strait. One of your top five phosphate exporters sit behind the strait. And so that was our focus. It was like, okay, what are we losing? And it started with just losing shipping days, and it's moved into production losses, and prices were moving up. Well, now as we're starting to move into the third week, now we have to worry about this story branching out into other markets. And what we mean by that is major urea producers like India. Well, they have a lot of domestic production. They still import a lot of product, but they have major domestic production. But those producers are fed by gas from the Middle East, which is cut off because of the strait. Global manufacturers of phosphate, their two biggest variable cost inputs is anhydrous and sulfur. Well, again, three of your top 10 global exporters in anhydrous sit behind the strait. Almost half of your tradable sulfur comes from the Persian Gulf. So we're now seeing this whole thing start branching out. As you said, prices are skyrocketing out there. Even as of this morning, we've set fresh highs in the urea markets, globally speaking, because of yesterday's attacks on Qatar's and Iran's oil fields, those same oil and gas fields that feed their production facility. This has moved beyond a shipping logistical issue, and it is now a true production issue.
Yeah, and that's the fertilizer side of things, but we're also looking at spring planting around the corner, and fuel prices are a large concern as well. I mean, Darren, what are you seeing on that front?
Well, it's not a pretty situation in fuel markets either. Josh talked about the impacts on fertilizer, and those things just roll up and get magnified as you look at fuel. We're seeing gasoline prices now $3.70 some on the average nationally. Diesel's over $5. And those expenses roll into what the farmers pay for the freight on the products that they buy, the things that our retailers get in to provide to them, shipping for the commodities on the way back out. And then you've got impacts in the vessel freight market, both inbound and outbound too, with higher insurance costs, higher, longer delay times in port, surcharges on vessels. It's expanding rapidly, and the impacts are going to be significant.
Yeah, and Darren, the Ag Retailers Association sent a letter to President Trump warning about larger supply chain disruptions from this conflict. I mean, what are the broader impacts to the farm economy from the conflict that we're seeing right now?
Well, the farm economy was in a tough position already. A number of members I've talked to, the number one concern on their minds is farm gate economics. And so as we look at raising costs further in a tight margin environment, both for farmers and for retailers, this couldn't come at a worse time for the impacts on our industry.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. Thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. The near halt of vessels moving through the Strait of Hormuz could have broader supply chain disruptions. We asked Josh Linville with StoneX how the disruption could impact the broader farm economy.
The farm economy was not in a great place before this entire conflict started. In fact, one of the things we had seen in the fertilizer market is a very slow approach to the marketplace, because for the entirety of this fertilizer, starting July 1, 2025, going through June 30, 26, buying had been very slow because farmers had looked at their economics and said, this doesn't make sense. And that was before the war started out. So now all of a sudden everybody has waited, and now we're moving into spring season. We're literally out of time. This could not happen at a worse time of the entire calendar. And the thing I joke, not funny, haha, almost kind of funny, sad, is if somebody had tried to sit there and say, Josh, come up with a nightmare scenario for fertilizer right now, we literally have touched on every point about the only thing we're missing is Russia shutting down their exports, which we're hearing this morning, they're shutting down their ammonium nitrate exports for a single month. It's not a major deal, but it's like, wow, we are this close to this thing going from bad to worse. We do still believe, based on the numbers that we see, we produce a lot of the anhydrous that we use. We produce a lot of the UAN that we use. We import a fair bit of urea, but fortunately our imports through March based on forecast are looking very, very good. Unfortunately, we are seeing that urea price rise very rapidly, but the silver line is that we should not start losing those vessels because our price is rising rapidly. It should keep those vessels headed this way. I'm hoping that we don't have the supply crunch that other nations around the world, I think, are going to start having here very soon.
Yeah, and there's lots of farmers listening to this right now who are hopefully not panicking yet, but as they're hearing all of this, you know, what should they be keeping in mind as they're making their decisions for 2026? I mean, some may still be purchasing fertilizer, of course the fuel, but what parts of this conflict should they be watching as they make those decisions?
I'm not gonna sit there and say the conflict doesn't matter. It absolutely does, right? But at the end of the day, I think this needs to become more of a conversation, less of a focus on the world and more of a conversation with your supplier, with your retailer. We're talking about all these things globally. It's a big restrictor on the amount of supply that's out there. And again, farmers didn't want to buy. Well, the retailer looked at it and said, well, I can't take all the price risk myself. I can't fill the entire plant, not sell a ton, and just hope that this all works out. So they've been slow. And without that input from the farm gate, it's very, very difficult for them to pull the trigger on buying positions. So the more conversations we can have with the retailer, the more conversations about what our plans are, doesn't mean you need to buy it, but it does mean we need to have the conversation so they at least have some sort of an idea of what you're going to need so that they can get those tons in place, get them coming.
I completely agree with what Josh said. The earlier that the farmer and the retailer can have conversations about what they need, the better. Especially in a situation like this one, where you could have locked in a price, you know, in hindsight's 2020, but you could have locked in a much better price or hedged your risk early on. Now, buying at the last minute is difficult, even in normal conditions, and really difficult now. So keeping a sharp eye on costs, frequent conversations with your supplier, all that's going to be important as we head into the spring.
We'll be back with more newsmakers, but first, Andrew Hunneke has more on rising diesel fuel prices in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Fuel prices continue to climb due to the war with Iran, and ag industry leaders say the added costs will be felt across the ag transportation chain. Barely any ships are passing through the Strait of Hormuz, which saw an average of 20 million barrels of petroleum pass through on a daily basis in 2024, according to the Energy Information Administration. This chart shows the average cost of a gallon of diesel fuel in the U.S. The EIA says diesel fuel is currently averaging $5.07 per gallon, which is up by 4.5% from last week and up 30% from the average price 2 weeks ago of $3.89. Gas prices are currently averaging $3.72 per gallon. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Don't miss the must-attend Ag Policy event of the year. Register now for the 2026 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear directly from the leaders shaping the future of agriculture as they explore innovative ideas to strengthen rural economies and guide policy decisions for the year ahead and beyond. The summit takes place March 23rd at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., with a virtual option available. View the agenda and register today at agripulse.com under the Events tab.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. Lost all of our sheep literally a week before we start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Both the House and Senate will be in session next week. Plus, mark your calendars for the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit on Monday, March 23rd in Washington, and streaming virtually. National Ag Day will be celebrated on Tuesday, March 24th. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.